As our guests enter, we'll fit them with their own terry cloth robe with a lapel mic already on it. And they'll just sit. We'll have a massage table. But nobody's going to massage you. You just think that you're going to get a massage, but you're not getting it. Not on this show. Not in this economic crisis.
You're listening to
Hot Garbage.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hot Garbage Podcast, your weekly music playlist. My name is Drew. Joining me, as always, is the camisole to my tank top, my dear friend Andy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Andy.
I'm not replying to that.
You're a lacy,
ooh, yeah.
A lacy, sexy garment to my utilitarian garbage shirt.
That tickled my fancy.
That's the idea. Our silent partner Nate is with us as he is every week, making the sound happen. Andy, how's every little thing?
Oh man, things are good. Things are real good.
Andy, I have a very trivial pet peeve that I encountered today. I was doing laundry today, and I had to wash my duvet cover. Do you have a duvet cover? Do you have to like take something off of your comforter to wash?
Yeah.
I had that experience where I tried to put it in the dryer, and it twisted on itself, and like a towel got caught down in it.
Yeah, like the crocodile death knot.
Yeah, exactly. It was I had already, like, I had buttoned it up, and I hadn't overloaded or anything like that, and still, it was like two dry runs because it had just swallowed up wet towels and held it hostage.
Yeah. The thing is, with a duvet, you got to go solo. Nothing else in there.
You got to run it by itself. Yeah.
It's got to. I've learned that lesson the hard way.
Yeah. I really hate the whole experience of having the duvet cover. I think in general,
yeah,
like stuffing it back inside, you know, there's a technique to it, but it's still.
But there is a moment when I'm stuffing that thing back inside. I like to climb inside of the duvet cover.
I do too. That's the only way I can do it. I know there's a way to like slide it along the side. I've seen people be very efficient, but
I get right up in it. And sometimes I just think, what if I just stay in here forever inside my little duvet fort?
Yeah.
It's kind of nice. I don't know why I don't hang out in there more often. Every time I do laundry, I remember how nice and warm it is. And it's great.
That's what I have that waiting for me tonight after we record, because I've got to get my bed back in shape after cleaning my sheets and stuff. And it's, you know, about 100 degrees right now. So climbing in that sweaty cocoon to make a blanket so that I can go to bed is, I'm not looking forward to that.
I may have told this in the story of the show before, but I spent a summer working in a lumber yard as a teen, and it would get really hot, so I would go up into the second story of the pole barn that had all the insulation and make a little insulation igloo, and I would climb inside of it and
lungs to shreds. But
it was all sealed up, just the bales.
And I would
sit inside of it and see how long I could last, and then when I would come out, it would just feel so cool outside.
Oh, you're just like jumping out of like a hot tub into a cold lake or something.
Yep. So that's what you should do when it's real hot.
How was the
climb
chafing
inside of a big pile of insulation?
How was the chafing in that job? Was this a heavy powder kind of job?
No. They were all sealed in like big plastic things.
No, but just the heat of working in a lumber yard.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, it's hot. There's a lot of bees. There's a lot of bees in that lumber.
Yeah,
you find
bees
out about
love lumber.
That sucks. And
second only to flowers in terms of plants, bees love.
Yeah. And a lot of shitty lumber. You're sorting through a lot of boards for the customers.
Well, I would say that we had the opposite.
This is really
boring. In lumber terms, we had the opposite of shitty lumber for our guest this week.
This was solid lumber.
This was a fantastic. This is some primo, like build your high end log cabin lumber tonight, because we had Portland's funniest person, Caitlin Weyerhaeuser, on the show. Amazing episode. Lots of fun hanging out with Caitlin. Brought some great music to play. Cracked wise for our entire time together, and just a great conversation. You can see Caitlin on October 4th with Les Comedy, which is going to be taking place at Helium.
Les Stand Up.
That's at Helium on October 4th. And you check out Caitlin, just like, you know, Google.
She does a lot of
like
shows.
Six nights a week.
It's great.
She's a fantastic stand-up and just a great person to hang out with.
You can also hear her on X-Ray in the Morning reading the news with Jason Traeger.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. Check that out. It's great.
And more importantly, you can hear her this evening on our episode of Hot Garbage. So please enjoy our conversation with Caitlin Weyerhaeuser on this week's episode of Hot Garbage.
I keep getting invited to Harry Potter trivia because I do the Harry Potter podcast, mm-hmm. and I get it.
Yeah.
Like, I see how you would put those two things together.
But it's the trivia part.
It is. Yeah. And I can't, I don't remember names at all. It's like an ongoing joke that I make up new names for every single character in that stupid book because I don't remember their stupid names.
I thought it was, you're like, I read this stuff. Why do I have to prove it to this group of people?
That too. That's the stance I'm taking outside.
Yeah. I don't think we can either make you feel bad about yourself or, you know, make you have to pretend that you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, plus I don't like trivia. I fucking hate trivia. It's stupid.
I kind of like trivia. I'm not
a comedian too.
By people thinking it's stupid.
I love trivia so much. Trivia is the one thing I excel at. It's just knowing a bunch of useless facts.
I excel at arguing with friends.
That's a good skill.
I'm really good at that.
Yeah.
But I don't want to do it.
Are you in the are you going to do a podcast? Is that in the
cards? She does a Harry Potter podcast.
Oh, I'm sorry. You just said that.
Mm-hmm.
I should, you know.
It's been on hiatus because it's hard to do things. Name a thing.
You're a super busy comedian. So squeeze in there,
Yeah, so we've been off for like a couple weeks, but it's Harry Potter fan theory. Really digging
like
deep
that.
Into, yeah.
Nice.
We don't have a hard rule on no erotica. But we haven't found anything that's like compelling enough. Plus, none of us really want to be reading it. So we're like, I'm sure there's some good fan theory embedded deep into some like amazing erotic out there. And unless it gets sent to us, we're not going to go finding it.
Well, that's a dicey area because like slash fiction started as sort of like kind of underground erotica about things like Star Trek and all that kind of stuff. Where
right.
just unusual mm-hmm. pairings, usually in erotic situations.
Like the erotica I write.
And
wait.
Annie does write.
Whoa.
You write wife erotica. You write it for your wife.
I write erotica for my wife to enjoy, but she doesn't enjoy it.
Is it just on little post-it notes attached to sandwiches?
That would be better. No, it's all text messages. She's explicitly told me to stop sending her those text messages.
She writes back with a capital stop.
Dirty, dirty perv.
Yeah.
How often do you send her erotic?
She's going to block you.
I haven't done it in a long time.
She doesn't need your phone number.
I'm writing them for myself, it turns out. So, yeah.
Do you have a gift for it?
No.
No.
Because I do not. I do not have a gift.
Does it include emojis?
It should. It does now.
There you go.
Only so many grapefruits that you can, or whatever. What's the
eggplant? Grapefruit.
Sorry. The most sexual fruit that I could think of came right to my mind.
Grapefruit. Yeah.
Just thought about getting squirted in the eye, and that's immediately what popped in
Trigger.
My head.
That's lazy, too. I think that's a weird size thing, because the pepper is much more phallic than the... Well, I mean, they both look like dongs.
Yeah, yeah they're fine.
The
yeah.
pepper?
Yeah.
I don't know the
like
pepper.
Like a chili pepper or like a bell pepper?
Yeah, like a big green bell pepper.
I think you're
like,
very specifically talking about yourself.
Yeah, I think
the
you're right.
Pointy end?
Yeah.
Sure.
That was that shriveled pepper emoji. Yeah. You know, I mean, I use them interchangeably.
That skinny curved one with point in the end.
Peppercini? That's just itty bitty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you thinking of the edamame one where it's segmented?
That's not a pepper.
It's like your penis has swallowed.
Yeah, that weird pepper that looks like a
three
bean.
Smaller balls.
Yeah.
Ovi positioning.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. I put
posturing position. Yeah.
I have a couple of alien eggs gestating.
Well, that's graphic.
Yeah,
that's why your wife doesn't want to.
Yeah,
she's not into my
it's confusing
very specific
fruit emojis.
Yeah, it's a lot of like clone porn. I don't know. Maybe it's too soon. I'm ahead of my time.
Keep writing it though. I'm glad there's a digital record.
Yeah, throw 10 or 15 years on that and see where it ends up.
Yeah.
But Harry Potter fan fiction, what I was going to say is, you know, those things started, you wanted to support that kind of creativity for a lot of times for communities that didn't get sort of an artistic voice. But when you're doing that for stories that are about children, then you're inviting all kinds of.
Yeah, we did try to keep the podcast like FCC-ish, like a version of. So we're like, let's try not to use swears and let's try not to, sexual content. And we lasted, I think, an episode and a half
before you broke your own rules.
Yeah, and we changed over a couple episodes in because we had this like deep conversation about like it. I'm sorry, it just feels weird to be talking about a children's book
mm-hmm.
and be like, "Oh, fucking!"
Yeah.
But then we realized that's what our relationship is to the books now. And so that is what we're talking about. Like, there are appropriate children ones. Don't, this is not it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's always weirdly, yeah, explicit, mm-hmm, and political. We've had two purely political episodes.
That's kind of like our podcast. We started as a parenting podcast.
Did you really? I love how they evolve.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was always a parenting podcast.
Andy just talked about being a parent in the context of a music. And Nate, too. Nate's got, they both have two.
It was never a parenting podcast.
No, never once. I sometimes talk about it being a parenting / music / Taco Bell podcast. That's a big topic.
It is kind of a really long Taco Bell commercial, if you think about it.
Yeah. We've got nothing. We've received no attention from Taco Bell.
Hashtag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, they did take my advice and do the naked chicken taco.
Mm-hmm.
I'd been tweeting about that, and they just ignored me for
years. You are a Taco Bell influencer.
So I pitched it to Burger King.
You were the seed idea.
Tacos made chicken. Also pitched it to McDonald's to do the Big Mac taco. They just take a Big Mac and fold it in half and hand it to you.
That, I'm surprised they didn't take you up on that. Because,
yeah, that sounds great.
Right?
McDonald's wants to do anything it can with that Big Mac. They're just riding on that Big Mac now.
And conveniently, they're all already punched flat. So
right, yeah. Yeah. And they're pretty malleable. They're not breaking because there's nothing natural in them.
You just put it in the taco press and then you hand it out the window.
Caitlin, I think we're catching you at a good time because you are now Portland's funniest person.
Well, yeah, they just.
So this is a good time to be on here. Does that, do you feel a lot of pressure?
No.
Okay. That was the opposite. Yeah, absolutely. Because,
make it or break it.
I'm one of those people that's not personally funny, but I demand a lot.
This is one of those that we're going to look back on, you know, it's like the milestone podcast.
Yeah. 173, that's where it all turned.
That's where it all turned.
It aired after the first episode of 175. Yeah. You completely
created a time loop.
So no pressure? You don't feel any differently about things like...
Oh, no, insane amount of pressure. Are you really kidding? Ha ha. No.
Good. <that's... laughs>
Are you familiar with imposter syndrome at all? Because that's taking a front seat, just banging around up there. It's a lot. I really, really, really was very surprised. And I knew that my tendency is to not... like respond in a healthy way to like a big thing like this. So I gave myself a week to be like, you know what? Just chop wood, carry water. You go back to work. You're just do your normal stuff and don't think about it, which was very hard. But yeah, I just actually gave myself a week to be like, chill out, figure out how you're going to feel about this and then move forward in a second. So that was helpful.
What came out of that week? What was the plan for?
Complication. A lot of complicated feelings. Like, it's a huge honor, and I'm very, very, like, proud of myself. At the same time, it felt just, yeah, very sudden. And then you're like, did someone mess up? Or?
And you have some amazing comedy peers that were in that competition.
Absolutely.
It was really stacked lineups. So that's amazing.
I was looking down the line at Stupid Dum Dum, Adam Posse. we have sweet little names for each other. I'm Poop Butt. He's Stupid Dum Dum. I was looking down the line being like, it's yours. This one's for you. And Rico had turned around to try to get my stupid attention. He was like, looking at me, looking at Posse. It's like, Caitlin, where else are, like, at the side of my head. Didn't expect it, but it's been pretty fun. It's the only bummer I can say, and this is a common trope, is that like, it's a really cool credit to have, and then you get brought up on a show, people are like, it's Portland's funniest, and you're like, okay, if I fuck up,
yeah,
I'm probably gonna die. So that's fun. The worst part is they say that when you're out working at open mics. And just like, I had a weird shower thought, and I need to say this in public, because that's how stupid comedy works. And they're like, and now, Portland's funniest.
I'm
like,
Portland's naturally funniest person.
Exactly.
Working out some
Who
material.
Never puts just any work into
it. Real rough. You know? Yeah. Yeah, so that's been interesting. Yep, feels weird. Feels real weird.
I'm always curious. I don't know anything. That's writing a comedy set to me, a stand-up set, is one of like the most opaque things from a creative point of view that I can think about. So what is like the actual writing process like for you? Is it something that's very regimented? Is it improvisational?
And it changes, and you have to like fight your brain constantly. It is like the my favorite mental workout for sure. That's like why I've been doing it as obsessively as I have for the last 4 years. It's super fun to figure out, like, because you get better at like one aspect and then that process changes, but your brain is habit based and wants to do the thing it knows it's gotten a reward for in the past. And right. So you want to build good habits and good, like, neural, you know, patterns, but at the same time, you always have to be recognizing, can I be better at this if I do it different? Mm. Test that theory. So it's like constant kind of malleable. I don't know, you're slowly gaining traction. Basically, I'll get like a little seed idea or some stupid stoner thought or the idea for like what, like I could, where I could end up. Like mm-hmm. sometimes you reverse engineer something, mm-hmm. but you take a little nugget of something to open mics, and I write a lot on the mics as I go up. So I record all the sets and listen back to them, pick out the pieces that make sense and that are funny, and then try to Frankenstein it into like a living thing. Mm-hmm. But it is, those bits change as you do them. Cause I'll probably run through something, I'll give it 3 or 4 times. And if it's not working, I'll probably kill it or drop it for a while.
Yeah.
But a lot of times I'll have an idea and try to smush it into a show, like in between other working bits.
Yeah.
And see if I can pull something off, like sneak something in there. See? No? Okay, now I'm going to go back to one that totally works.
Just
and I know
like a
that.
Loaded gun, you know, you'll yeah. pepper that in there.
And just see, huh? See if it, anybody? You know, yeah. Nope. All right, we'll go to something else. But yeah, it's a lot of, I committed last year, I've been pretty good about it. I write and edit for an hour a day with like listening back to my sets, making notes on that, or just like writing new stuff or, you know, chopping out whatever, reviewing, working on stuff for, I really, really try to get at least an hour a day in. And that's made a huge difference.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you find those kind of, you're talking about those mental pathways for your process. Do you have like a pretty quick connective tissue for things now? Is that developed a shorthand for the process since you've been consistent with it?
Kind of, but like you're constantly looking for a better way to do a thing. Mm-hmm. And so like, I think a big advantage for me is that I'm really easily malleable. I'll listen to stand up almost every single day of like other people that have released albums that I love. And sometimes even on purpose, people that I don't love, to hear what they're doing, how they construct a joke. And I'm really malleable to that. So I'll test and see, can I write a joke like that? That's a really cool like structure. That's a really cool way that he told a story, or that's a really cool way that they like strung unrelated scoop at the end, like events mm-hmm. together or whatever. Like I'll try to like mimic other writers too. So yeah, it's kind of shortened the process. I've gotten more familiar with the fact that like there's some core aspects to writing comedy for me. I write live and on the mic, like best. I write best out in front of people pressured to say something funny. But I also definitely have to put in the work. Like there's no natural, like just go up and say some stuff. Yeah. Like, well, I could. It's not going to be as nice as you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
It really takes work. And so I've got a good relationship with the fact of that.
I kind of feel like that's how the rap game's gone too. You know,
people are up on the mic just trying some stuff out. Like,
I feel like people aren't freestyling as much
anymore. Yeah.
I feel like this has been talked to death recently.
Has it been on our show?
No, just like in general in the world. Like people are just like admitting that freestyle is super whack and that you should just write really good riddance and put them out on the internet.
I have gone to listen to freestyles by rappers I like on podcasts, though. And that's a cool thing that's happening.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Maybe it's that's
like
what
these
it
weird sides. Yeah.
It's more of a live art form, you know?
Yeah.
You want to see it happening. I'm not going to like rock the new freestyle mix by somebody anymore.
Well, it's probably, I mean, you want to get the best output. Like, I think,
exactly.
as
it's
you're saying, it's great to start as a freestyle. I feel like, you know, I have rapped in my past, and the things that I write, I'm not saying they're great, but they all start as a little just me jabbering to myself until I find two things that I like together. And then I write from that. So it's kind of what you're, in a sense, what you're describing. So do you, as a whole, do you prefer the open mic performing to the work of polishing is like, do you have a comfort level?
No, I hate open mics.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Have you been to a comedy open mic? Oh my God. They're brutal. It's just a slow parade, hell's punishment of just sadness and misery and torment.
Is there a crowd for that? Do you feel, is there an audience for this kind of?
These blessed beings will come and listen to open mics and, you know, bless our hearts. Usually they've been tricked into it and they will only come to one or two because the first, I love when they come to the second one because they've got this like chip on their shoulder about like, surely.
Yeah.
It was just a weird night. Yeah. This can't be this bad.
They're muttering to themselves. No, I like comedy. I enjoy comedy.
Yeah.
It had to have been me the first time.
So it's a handful of first timers ever to a comedy thing. Second timers, sure that it can't be this bad all the time. people that are interested in maybe starting stand up. And then it's friends of the one or two people whose first time it is getting up that night. And that's an open mic audience. Plus a bunch of comedians hugging the back wall, not paying attention to who's on stage for the most part. And if they are, they're laughing for the wrong reasons. Like, it's either inside baseball or we think it's funny when you fuck up. Like, it is a hard...
Oh, God.
That sounds horrible.
It's a hard gym to work out in sometimes.
It sounds terrible.
But there's really good ones, too. And you learn by going up that, like... I have to be a good listener, and I need to know weird things to listen for that I never expected that would be a thing. Mm-hmm. And it's mostly just my own voice is becoming a better critic of my own process and my own comedy. And so, like, being able to getting better about identifying, hey, that's funny, or that is not, and I know how hard you tried, dum-dum, but let it go. Yeah. Which is actually a hard thing to do, but it's your own.
Have you found that your instincts are generally right? So if you think something is funny, are you more often right about that, or are you more often tossing things away?
Yeah, and part of it is that I don't have to wait a long time because I'm up almost every night. I try to take one night off a week. So I do try to get up at least six nights a week. I try to get up six nights a week. So I do have an idea. It's not going to sit in the notebook long without being tested at least once. I'm very antsy about material and I love churning new stuff. It's a really fun challenge for me to continually be bringing out, new material that is at least semi-worked.
What do you remember about your first time doing stand-up?
Not a lot. No. I practiced a ton. I wrote 3 minutes and I practiced in front of anybody that I could get to sit down and trap for 3 minutes. Did it with a hairbrush. Knew that. Theater kid. Oh, yeah. Use your props.
Yeah.
You've got props. Use your props.
Yeah.
Get familiar with your props.
Yeah.
So I hairbrushed it in front of friends and neighbors and anyone that would sit still and ate shit. I did it at the Bar of the Gods. Fun little mic and showcase that existed for a long time. I know who was there, but I don't remember. I remember just one flash picture of a memory of looking down, realizing that my feet are on stage, there's a light on me, and I've got a mic, I'm currently being amplified. I have a snapshot memory of this is happening.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing I remember.
Well, we have that recording right now.
Here we go.
Wouldn't it be awesome if that was the podcast?
Oh my God.
We just exposed people's creative shame.
That.
And then made them sit with us for another hour after that.
That's so next.
That would take some deep work. We'd have to plan that out.
There does exist the first showcase, I think the first or second showcase that I was ever on, and it is still to this day the hardest I've ever bombed. I just didn't know how to pull out of it. Once it started, I hadn't been up that long to know, just get out of there.
Yeah.
Just get out. No,
you
so
just
I just
burrowed
kept
deeper and deeper and deeper
into the ocean. Just into the kept bomb. Really wow. Dug deep.
You would think that there's a floor to the bombing, but no, it goes deeper than you would think.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I'll get a little too full of myself, a little too big for my britches, and Adam Posse will remind me because it was his show that I ate shit on.
So you've got some
he will just bring that up.
There,
I do remember the time.
Well, let's listen to some music. I know you were gracious enough to bring a couple of tunes. And guests get dealer's choice. So what would you like to kick things off with on the music side tonight?
The Last Artful Dodger.
Oh, amazing.
Yes. How into her are we?
Oh, yes. Huge.
On a scale of
big
one
fan
to
on this show.
You just I've gotten to be on two things with them, which was amazing. I did a show I think it was Late Night Action with Alex Falcone.
Oh yeah.
And Last Artful Dodger was on that, and then I got to introduce her and the whole crew at Pickathon this year.
Oh, great.
So that was really awesome. Cool. Mm-hmm. So I'm deeply in love right now with the intro to Dodger Caverns.
World. Yeah.
Is my favorite that thing in the dope. World right now.
Make way out of my way. Clear the room, you're crowding all the space. Need no favors, give no favors. They gon' ask for them shits anyway. But I'm a ooh or nah, huh? And I'm tired of saving your kind. You're so spineless, you're so spineless. Snaking through the place, you're cool to grab. When you fight them up just by stepping on. Slaying bodies, full bodies, you're ringing necks. Every line that I'm writing's already set in stone. Cold a diamond, they mining them old bits. Nah. Oh, them better fall back. Don't want to with the winner, y'all, you better fall back. Floor crawl, I better crawl back. Don't want to with the winner, y'all. Make way. Tired of asking nicely, but I do this precisely till the moment of Tyson fit inside me. Carpal tunnel vision, pinch the nerve, I'm numb the bitch and hand the cheeks back a teeth. I didn't want to tempt this. But no business and all pun intended. Finna find your dinner strip to Paris, ain't that weird? Really do should be embarrassed. The law would even come up in this bitch and slaughter. Miles on miles, it isn't fair. Life's not fair. Learned it as a car. Barely even revving up. Like a reverend, do it for the revenue. And y'all be dead before I go to federal. So I'm good, honey, I'm great. What's the secret on my, I can't say. Buzzing beef, friend of my new campaign. With a dozen beats, 50 flights of champagne. Slithering, parcel tongue gibbering. But with the cars y'all delivering, I'm on my 52 pickup shit. I know what the hell you're dealing with. Duh.
Whatever. Yeah, Charles Bradley there had a purple silk suit, three costume changes, and a cape, like a floor-length heavy satin cape. And I was like, yeah, that's who I want to be when I grow up. Yeah. Love you more than life.
He's amazing.
He really is.
You have to commission a cape like that, too. You can't just go buy one.
No.
I saw him in like 2000, I don't know, 13 or 14, something like that, at the Aladdin. And he came out into the crowd see, that's, in tears. Okay. And hugged the whole audience.
Gosh.
He was so awesome. He had three outfit changes, one of which was an all-white suit with, like, wings that opened up that were gold.
Oh, my God.
It was amazing. It was like he looked like Black Bolt from Inhumans or something.
Oh, that's incredible.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Heroes.
Love that guy.
Heroes among us.
My mom, we bought her tickets for her birthday to Hoxieville in Michigan. It's a bluegrass music festival. And Charles Bradley was supposed to be there, and he didn't show up.
Oh.
I don't know what happened.
Costume malfunction. It's a shame.
Mm-hmm.
It's really
the wings.
Really sad.
I'm sure
they opened inward. Yeah. Cut off
his body.
So, most
like,
of his body.
Just like it was like mostly flesh wound, but it did like snap a few pieces of skin. Poor Charles. We hope that he gets well. What kind of music listening teenager were you? What was on the boombox when you were like 15 years old?
A couple different, very distinct phases. At 15, I was in band and. Learning to drive. So I was interning at the Actors Cabaret in Eugene doing props and lights and sound. So I was listening for a bunch of musicals. So I was listening to a ton of musical soundtracks. Also was involved in musical theater in my hometown and was in band. So I was checking out, I was basically utilizing the entire music library at my high school, which was musicals, classical, and jazz.
Yeah.
And I would just take stacks of albums home every weekend and return them the next week and be just listening to consuming so much. Just musical theater, jazz, classical when I needed to. It did get me into opera, and I'm very, very grateful for that. But yeah, a lot of Charlie Parker, John Coltrane. Were kind of standbys, and Ella and Sarah Vaughan.
Were there musicals that you were helping to produce as well? Or was this more just live music?
I worked on a Patsy Cline musical. I think it was called Always. It was really beautiful. And my mom had been a huge Patsy Cline fan, so that was really cool. I was listening to a ton of that. I worked on a Western. What was it? It wasn't a Western. It was a spotlight on these ladies that worked like the traveling shows, like Calamity, or not Calamity Jane. I can't remember the name of the lady that like Annie right Oakley? On the top of what?
Like Annie Oakley?
Yes, right on the top of the horses and shoot and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was dramatic, but it was kind of soundtrack like themed by this old country music. So I was listening to that. Worked on Anything Goes and Bye Bye Birdie, but totally fell in love with West Side Story. Never got to do it or work on it.
Yeah.
Listened to a ton of this Cole Porter sound book.
Did you sing? Are you a singer?
No. And that was, this is, I had been in theater, I think, since I was like 12 or 13. And part of it is that you take a bunch of dance classes and you take, you know, acting classes and you take your, you know, you do monologists, whatever. And one of them was like, oh, voice lessons. Good. Cause I definitely need some improvement. And I can hear that part for sure. And I was basically asked to leave two different voice classes. Cause they were like,
two people wrote you off?
Yes. Do anything with you. So,
all they have to do is show improvement. They couldn't even take you from nothing to a little bit of something.
Just pick a different one, sweetie. Go take another dance class. Aww. Lord knows you need that.
I wish we had their names. I would put them out, put those people's names out there and ruin their voice acting business.
I never accepted. I didn't accept it for so long. And in high school, I was like, no, but I can sing and I will.
Because you wanted to sing. Yes. Yeah.
More than anything. Yeah. And then in college, I was like, fuck it, I'm taking choir as an elective. Watch me. It's easy and I can do this.
And they also can't stop me. Exactly. They will not turn my money down.
They can't stop me. And I learned that I can blend okay. If I come in late and leave early on a note, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Step into a note a little bit and then get out of it. Off.
I also found out that hypoglycemic, and if I lock my knees, I will definitely faint. Yep. So I fainted and took out about six ladies behind me at the final rehearsal before recital. Just learning stuff about myself.
I always heard with those bright lights, you just lock your knees. Try not timber. To drink anything about water about an hour before.
Exactly.
And you just... Tip on back.
College is for learning about yourself, is it not?
It's experimenting with consciousness.
That's there just we kind are. Of like a just a surprise trust fall for everybody around you in the choir.
Yeah, just a lightning trust fall. Yeah. Be ready, everybody. Yeah. And they all move. If you really care about me.
Fail.
1, 2, 3, here I come. And there I went. Yeah. So
that happened. Can't sing. Love to. That happened in church one time.
Isn't that fun? Sorry.
It's
so funny, though.
He just passed out.
It's great on video.
Oh, God.
Right in front of
face
the whole
first.
Church. Yeah.
Oh, no.
His nose. Got a bloody nose.
I had a...
In the house of the Lord.
This wasn't...
In front of God and everybody.
Yeah. I once, in the middle of the night, got up to pee, and it was a combination of, like, getting up to pee in the middle of the night, standing up too fast, and then the pressure drop of just peeing standing up, and I went from peeing to on my back halfway in the bathroom, halfway out.
Still peeing.
Oh,
and I pretty I was mostly done.
Does your body have a shutoff mechanism?
There's a little switch that flips back. But I'm pretty sure I whacked my head on the door frame.
Oh,
I think I did pass out and slam my head. But I have no proof.
It's like when you knock over a heater, the little foot comes down and it's like, stop.
Yeah, exactly.
Power's off.
Yeah. You probably just hit your head hard enough to lose like 5 minutes of memory.
Yeah.
You didn't need those.
I didn't need it.
Those, you lost a couple.
Yeah, for example, I've forgotten entirely how much of my own urine got on myself.
Yep.
That part of the story doesn't even exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. So that's good.
So into musical theater at that point in your life, that formative point of your life, because I'm always curious about what people listen to when they're teenagers, because everyone's so moody. And
Rocky Horror was a big
one.
That's important stuff.
I loved Rocky Horror too as a kid. It was
super
cool. Me and my friends would watch that all the time. I never got into it. Never actually went and saw it. Like witnessed it live though.
There used to be one at the Clinton Street Theater that happened.
It still happens
weekly. Does it happen every week?
Yeah. I think the first penis, a man penis, on a man.
Still attached.
Walking through rehearsal set for Hair.
Oh, yeah.
As there was supposed to be a sock. There wasn't a sock. Mm-hmm. Fuck it, we're doing it live. Because I imagine how that went.
Yeah.
But yeah,
find my sock.
The Hair soundtrack is fucking amazing too.
It is. Yeah,
I was really into that.
That's Age of Aquarius. Is that Hair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little Sunshine. Which is a trippy song, by the way.
A little newer, but the Hedwig and the Angry Inch soundtrack. God, I still
is one of my favorites.
On regular. Yeah. I put that on mix CDs for people.
It's
still.
So good.
Origin of Love is like a 80s rock ballad. It's amazing.
I am always been a fan of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah.
I love that. I like the band that plays there.
Nerd.
Just the bass in Jesus Christ Superstar. Yeah.
I didn't see that movie really until, that bass. I don't know, like 7 years ago. And it was pretty cool.
I saw it on a bus to Kings Island, which is this Midwestern amusement park that our church was taking us on. So the movie we watched in this chartered bus was Jesus Christ Superstar.
Changed your life.
It was a day of thrills because I, you know, got on some roller coasters. Yeah. And I've been a Christian mission leader ever since.
Yeah. And really into that funk bass.
Yeah. Love that funky bass for Christ. Andy, I know you've been listening to music since you were a teen.
What
would you like to share with us this evening?
Oh, man. So every once in a while, I'll be searching on Bandcamp and I'll find something I really like that I'm searching for in the Portland heading, and it'll be Portland, Maine. And this is one of those weeks.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is a band called Big Blood. And up until recently, you couldn't even get this music unless you talked to this person in person and got a hand-burned CDR.
What kind of hipster shit?
They live in an artist commune in the woods.
Of course they do.
No.
Outside Portland, Maine, this husband and wife.
I can't endorse family. This.
And it's really good. It's really good. The production and the recording is great for being done in their kitchen or basement or wherever.
But now obviously it can be widely collected.
This is a band called Big Blood, and this is off of their album called The Daughters Union.
We'll be right back.
You know, you've been doing this stand-up thing, I suppose you would say, not super long compared to how long that career can go on, but you hit it really hard.
Yeah.
When you got in, I mean, I remember you very early and kind of just following.
That's right.
Yeah. So yeah. I just happened to, like, be watching your kind of career unfold. What do you view as kind of the long-term goal? What are your ambitions when it comes to comedy? And do you have a little bit more of a plan now than you did? Or
I think he's asking when you're moving to LA.
I know. Well, that's the thing. I didn't know that I was going to have to think about it because I didn't know I was going to win. And so that was the first question. Stephanie from Good Day Oregon came and interviewed me at my job the next day, next morning.
I watched that show, so that's crazy.
I adore her. Yeah. I am such a huge fan of hers. And she's come to Comedy Stuff, and I've been on her show twice. And she's amazing. She's as excited as I am, which makes me so happy when we're together.
That's awesome.
So she came to my work the next day. I was very hungover. We had a great time celebrating. And she was like, so when are you moving to LA? And I was like, I'm at my day job.
I'm staying here forever. I really see a future here.
I have a 10-year plan to stay here. I'm at my job, dude. So I don't know. I am thinking about it a ton now.
Yeah.
Therapy has been really helpful. Hey. Just being like, what am I supposed to do now? So New York or LA, probably LA. I definitely want to go down with more things in place than I do currently. So I've got a lot to achieve over the next year or so to kind of get to a place where I feel stable enough and able to go down there and kind of carry a momentum with me and make some stuff happen. I do want to, I know that I definitely do want to keep doing stand-up. But I definitely want to diversify that portfolio. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I really, really, really love storytelling, and that's been a big aspect of my stand-up. So, like, that's something that I aim to continue. I really like doing morning radio. I've been working at X-Ray or volunteer, whatever. I've been on X-Ray for, like, a year and a half. And just doing news and commentary, like that morning program.
Oh, man. I love listening to you read the news, too. It's so nice to hear you reading the news. But when somebody else who's just like...
Do you listen? Know.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh, my. Yeah. It trips me out that people listen. Like, I forget, because now it's just me and Jason Traeger. And we're just hanging out.
Like, oh, shit. Put it on that station. Yeah.
I really love doing that. That's something I want to be able to continue to do. And I'm just now starting some cool projects where I'll be doing some more stand-up training. Classes and storytelling workshops and stuff like that that I really like to be able to do. So, yeah, there's, you know, always the improv class that I'm supposed to take, too. There's a lot that I need to accomplish.
Yeah.
But stand-up is, definitely the focus of it. And I know there's, like, sometimes other kind of side avenues that people get into, which, like, writing sketcher for TV and stuff like that. And I think those are all kind of part of the package if you expect to be able to make this any kind of career is, like, you really got to do everything. Yeah. So, looking forward to it.
I just feel like when somebody wins the Best of Portland Comedy Festival, they move away. Just about every time they move away. And it's like, well, good for them. But that's a bummer. We lost another really funny person. Hopefully we'll see them on TV or writing for something cool.
If there's one thing I do hope for Portland, it is that there is a huge influx of industry here, like with entertainment and performance here. I hope that that industry grows and flourishes. Because I think it would be such a cool place to keep people and to draw even more than we already have. Amy Miller moved to Portland from Oakland, and I moved back to Portland from San Francisco with the hopes of doing stand-up here instead of in San Francisco because it is such a cool scene. We both knew about it. We loved it so much. So that is something I definitely hope. But as is, there's kind of a, you know, there's definitely a top that you hit where that's about as much money as you can be making.
Right.
That's about as much seen as you can be in Portland. But I think that top is constantly kind of lifting as we're getting more like TV show stuff filming here. Absolutely. Like it really makes a big difference. Harvey's is back, which is a good, you know, it's a good omen.
Yeah, oh, that's a good sign.
Having two clubs in a city is a good draw for comedians from other places, which only make the scene stronger. more valuable, you know?
It seems to me, just from kind of the outside, that it's also pretty kind of a broad base to the community here.
Yeah.
So even if you, I mean, Amy left to go to LA, what, last year?
Yeah, 16
like that.
Months ago.
But I know that she comes back frequently, and she still feels like she very much belongs to this comedy community.
Yeah.
So there's not really, it's really kind of a, you know, a saloon door kind of thing now. And I think Portland is at least on that continuum from, you know, nowhere to LA or New York.
Totally. Kind of on it's that totally higher a place. End of that. Mm-hmm. It's a real place.
It's a real place where legitimately talented people are coming out of it and making, you know, a noticeable impact, which is awesome.
There's a couple things I really love about that. One is that it's nice to see, it's so comforting to see all the comedians that get born out of Portland and go on to bigger stuff have created that, like, trope of coming back home on a regular basis. We get to see them a lot.
Yeah.
Which is so comforting and so good. Like, I think it keeps us, it's good for us. It's good for the whole scene. Also that there's a summer camp vibe in LA because there are so many people that we know, if not from Portland, but kind of immediate areas that when you do go down, it feels like, oh, the whole crew's back together. Like it feels really, it is really nice.
Let's play a little bit more music. I know you brought a couple more tracks. What's
sure?
What's the second jam you'd like to kick?
I'm going just a little tiny bit north, but to Olympia to play Gossip, because Beth Ditto has been so important in my life. I knew they were from the Northwest, and I listened to them. There's been a couple chunks in life where I've listened to Gossip like a ton. And it's one of those bands that once I kind of pick it up, I will only listen to Gossip for like a week and just get the baddest attitude. Like just, it's ferocious making music. And I really, really love it. But I was living in I was living in Las Vegas when I was like 21, 22. And it was one of the like first queer bands that I was like, this is my shit. Like
<They're>
when
really
you just
good.
Like, oh, and like the music that I listened to in high school, I think as like a queer person sometimes isn't the music that I have a really strong like attachment to. Like they were just talking about this on Homophilia with like Guy Branum about like, there's a concept of like being whatever music you heard when you were 13 is like the greatest music of all.
Yeah.
But for a lot of queer people, I think it comes a little bit later when we're like able to come out or like be out or like experiment and be like, oh, this is the thing then. But it's like not when we were 13, maybe.
Is it, I guess maybe for people who don't have that kind of growing up experience, maybe that 15, 13 year range is when you start to make your own first decisions, I guess.
Yeah.
You have a little bit of autonomy in a way that, or at least that's an avenue to some autonomy.
Absolutely.
And maybe you don't experience that until you have that comfort in your own, in every aspect of your life.
But for sure, the music I listened to even at that age, 13 to 15, was like, the first album I bought for myself was, I think, Alanis Morissette, Jagged Pill.
Oh, sure.
And then immediately Tragic.
Really? That was their first.
It's such a good album.
Yeah.
Wow.
You can do a lot worse. That was my first concert. I think she's on my first
really?
Concert.
Really? That's a good concert.
Yeah.
And then Tragic Kingdom, almost immediately thereafter.
Oh, yeah. That's a pretty good 1-2 punch.
Right?
So I guess when you were that age, we'll get to Gossip here in just a quick second. But when you were that age, do you associate it with not feeling great about yourself? Is there a negative connotation to that time of your life?
No.
For those things? Or?
Here's the thing. It went in a little, you know, loop or dip or whatever, roller coaster. So at that age when I got those albums, I was like, fuck yeah, badass stuff, doing badass things. Like feeling super badass. Chicks, badass. Everything, great. And then I got, I think, the first couple really big instances of like, I don't think all of this out here, kind of straight kingdom, tragic kingdom, if you will.
This tragic kingdom, actually.
I don't think it's for me. And so I had actually the first real deep wave of like self-loathing, self-aimed homophobia. And even the connotation of Alanis Morissette maybe being queer-ish or even queer-friendly. And the same with No Doubt. And who else was it? There was three. It'll come to me. I smashed those albums in a fit of like, oh, this isn't, that's like queer shit, whatever. That's like gay shit. Like, that can't be around it. So sad story about those first albums that I bought.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I have no way to totally relate to that, but it's interesting that music is one of those like connective tissues for all human beings.
So much.
You find that no matter what. I mean, that's a great way to find common ground with any person, regardless of how different you feel from them, is usually music. So mm-hmm. it's interesting to hear how those touch points impact us all in slightly different ways. But I'm glad to hear that gossip is something that you own and...
Oh yeah,
you know, yeah. Take oh, some.
I love Beth
Ditto. True ownership.
She got kicked out of a bar on Mississippi Street, and oh man, it's the best story. She did the
what?
Don't you know who I am? Thing a bunch,
yeah.
And they kicked her out, and she ended up screaming and yelling Barack Obama at the bar until the police came and took her away.
That's some good wild stuff.
It was like, yes, I love you. You're the best.
Well, what song should we listen to?
Going way back to the album that I played on repeat forever, which is That's Not What I Heard. Do Tough Love. That's
Tough Love.
A great one.
All right, here we go.
Whole vein of gossip, especially that album, Sheer Mag. There's another.
I thank you so much for playing Gossip too, man. Yeah. I love Gossip, and when my sister moved out to Portland to go to college, I had a Gossip DVD from the library, and we all sat down as a family and watched a concert together, and it was fucking amazing. And she did a cover of a Leah song that my sister loved as a kid, and it was
that's
amazing.
Incredible.
And she became a lifelong fan.
Oh, that's amazing! God, it's such a fucking good band. But yeah, I like that. Anything that's a little bit poppy, garage adjacent.
Did you grow up roots. In the Northwest, or did you grow up in Las Vegas?
No, I grew up in the Northwest, southwest of Eugene, way out rural in the woods, a town called Scottsburg, and on Highway 32.
So growing up, I grew up in the Midwest, as did Andy and Nate. So for me, like Seattle and that whole area was sort of mythical, and the kind of stuff was going out there on a national level.
Yeah, it was where some Harry and the Hendersons lived, and I loved it, and I wanted to be there. So
yeah, bad. Did you have some sense of that being at least, you know, in the region? Was that a part of, like, the threat of growing up was like, oh, man, this is all blowing up right now?
Well, from a young age, my brother had me convinced that Ewoks lived in the forest behind my house.
That makes total sense.
So I can say yes, but to questions you didn't ask.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I had an awareness of some magical stuff happening all around me. No, when I was 10, we moved to a little bit less rural place, like a suburb almost, right outside Eugene. And so that put me close in enough to do musical theater and stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that I remember in junior high. So it was, from fourth grade on, I went to school outside of Eugene. A little ways outside of Eugene. Not like next door. Right. But in seventh or eighth grade, I want to say it was seventh that Kurt Cobain died.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being acutely aware of kind of the mega impact of that. Mourning junior high girls was maybe the worst thing that you could have been around if you had any semblance of appreciation or love for Kurt Cobain at all, because it was a disgusting display of out mourning each other almost immediately.
It was a huge mess, and I was really mad about it. My grandfather passed away that same weekend as all that stuff was happening. I was like, fuck you, Kurt Cobain, and I was super mad about it.
Yeah,
I took the other way. And all these girls were so sad about it. And they talked about how deep it was. This one girl I knew said that her cat was the reincarnation of Kurt Cobain. And that really pissed me off.
Oh, yeah.
That was every other girl.
Yeah.
It's cat. I, for whatever reason, I jumped out of grunge almost immediately, and it is really still selective for me to get back into. It makes sense on paper that I would be way more into grunge than I am, and I just never... This is a hotly contention or whatever. It's not a popular opinion. I don't like the fucking Smashing Pumpkins. Thank you so much. I don't like Counting Crows.
You've got a friend in Andy.
I don't think, or Collective Soul, or whatever the fuck. It's just, it's boring, long, melodic shit. I don't like it.
This is good, because I'm a big fan of a lot of the things you just mentioned, and this will be, I've thrown off a lot of unpopular opinions. It's good to be visited, have this visited back upon me.
Can we throw some grunge bands at you and see if you like them or not?
Yeah.
Are you talking to me, or are you talking, you guys are going to be on the same side.
I like this game.
You can taunt me with them if that's what you're asking.
All right, how about Mudhoney?
I don't even know a song they would have done.
All right, well, let's go more mainstream. Pearl Jam.
Thumbs up for Drew.
I don't think I like any song.
Nice. That's amazing. That's amazing. What's another one? Soundgarden.
Thumbs up. Drew loves them.
No, I remember. No. Like, my brother really liked that Spoon song. Spoon Man.
Yeah.
And then there was Spoon the Candy Man. Box, and I was like, no, I think I'm supposed, I hate it. I don't like it.
Wonderful. Okay. We're two for two, I think.
Boring and bro-y. Like,
how about
no, that's damning.
Another grunge band. Oh, Stone Temple Pilots.
Yeah.
No, nope.
Way, is that the way underrated?
Girl B costume.
No, that's Blind Melon.
That's how much I don't like Stone Temple Pilots.
Love Blind Melon, by the way. Although Blind Melon's for hippies, so I think they're outside the grunge range.
Oh, yeah. A dude tried to dedicate a Stone Temple Pilots song. There's like a bass line in a song about a girl that he tried, and I still don't give a shit. I've never enjoyed it. I don't like that music.
Awesome. I think I'm out of grunge bands at the moment. Unless you want to get deep, we could talk about the Melvins. I do like the Melvins.
Here's what I think you should do if you've got it. So you like that music I think you should use my appreciation of it to castigate me, as I do with people who like Bob Dylan, for example.
Yeah.
It's only fair that you use that as a measuring stick for me as a human being, as I do so childishly with so many others.
It's boring, bro-y, moody music.
The bro-y one is the one that, you know, I don't consider myself a bro, but that seems like a pretty...
Look around next time you go to a listening party or whatever you're doing with it.
We do. We go to the one Sam Goody in the region, and we just put on headphones together.
Yeah, we get a splitter. We bring a splitter.
Yeah. Yeah. For always water. I will say that I do have some positive connotations to Nirvana because I have such strong feelings for the David Bowie cover that they did.
I feel the same way. That was part of the reason I got into David Bowie.
It's the best thing that's ever happened, like, on both sides. Like, that song is incredible.
It's so good.
And those were the two people in all of human history that were supposed to do that song, and they did, and they existed at the same time, and that's fucking bananas.
And like, if you look back on it, and they've released a bunch of behind the scenes stuff on it, the executives at MTV were like, "No, you can't do a David Bowie song. That's not even one of his more popular songs."
Because it sounds bananas. Like on paper, you're like, "Fucking wait, which song?"
Yeah,
no one even that weird one.
They were like peak popularity. They're on MTV. They're supposed to play the hits, and he's like, "Oh, I'm gonna do some deep cuts. Here's a David Bowie song I really like." It's like,
what?
It was a Meat Puppets cover.
Oh, they did like two Meat Puppets songs.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was great. Those were some of their, that was their best album, in my opinion, was that MTV Unplugged.
Yeah. That's the one I listened to. That's the one I have on Spotify because it will come up and I'm like by context, like connotative. Mm-hmm.
Also,
that's a fucking good album.
My favorite Alice in Chains album.
Yes, I agree with you. Their Unplugged album is really good. Let's play some music, Andy. I know you've got a few more things mangle as you introduce.
I've got some, all right, so fuck you, Drew. I'm going to play you some Bob Dylan. But this is not Bob Dylan.
Yes, okay.
This is kind of ties into you being at Pickathon this year. This is another band that played Pickathon. This is a Scandinavian duo called My Bubba. That's made up of two girls named My and Bubba.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
And, is that a real thing?
Yeah, I know one of them's name is My. I don't think the other one's name is Bubba, though.
I hope who knows?
Bubba is like Jessica in Sweden.
Yeah.
Scandinavian. Yeah.
And this is a tribute to Bob Dylan they put out a few years back when they were called My Bubba and Me. Even more cute.
That is. It gets cuter by the minute.
And it's me. It's spelled M-I.
So which song is the one that I'm going to be? The
song's called Bob, We Love You. But it's actually a cover of You're Gonna Make Me Lonesome When You Go.
so direct. You're gonna make me lonesome when you go. Flowers on the hillside blowing crazy. Crickets talking back and forth in my mind. A blue river running slow and lazy. I could stay with you forever and never realize the time. My situations have ended sad. Relationships have all been bad. It's been like relays and rainbows, but there's no way I can compare all them scenes with this affair, honey. You're gonna make me lonesome.
Caitlin, we do like a mental exercise on this show every once in a while.
Sometimes.
Called Scenarios in Stereo.
Fun.
It's basically, I'll give, we'll all participate, but we'll give you a kind of a situation. You'll just kind of walk your way through your thinking. Purely hypothetical, but you are bound by the rules of the scenario. So are you game?
Sure.
Okay.
Hit it.
We'll start with something maybe a little silly. You live in a world starting tomorrow where you and you alone are forced to create on your upper lip a mustache that the foundation of which is human feces. So you have to apply human feces to your upper lip, and then whatever hair you can find, you can make it any design you want, but you have to affix a mustache where the glue holding it to your face is human feces. So you have two options. You can either make it so that the feces is purely visible to everybody else, but you can't smell it or interact with it or anything like that, but everyone can see that it's poop. Or it's invisible to everybody else, but you smell it all the time. Which would you choose?
Couple notes. You have very weird shower thoughts, dude.
That's where I do most of my quote-unquote writing.
It's strong workspace in there. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
I was trying to blast a pube off a bar of soap and... an idea.
What
was
if
born.
I had to wear this?
Yeah.
Am I the only one in this world that has to do this insane thing?
Yeah, you are. I can't explain how it got to this way. I don't know what lottery you won or lost, but here we are.
That's horrible. If it's invisible,
then it just looks like a very nice mustache that you've affixed.
Very nice face. That I've just...
Well, you've designed it, so it doesn't have to be... It's not like it has to be like a little smear of poop, and, like a little Hitler mustache of poop. You can make it a nice curled mustache. You can do like some chops.
Like the full state police mustache.
But it really... Yeah, exactly. You can go in any direction you want, but it looks very natural.
But if it smells, other people... sensibly could smell it too.
It doesn't. In the second scenario, only you can smell it.
Oh,
and it's
God.
Invisible to everybody else. So you're like outwardly you're scot free, but you walk around with the look you have on your face right now, pretty much all the time because you're smelling poop at all times.
I just have this look on my face all the time. All right.
I think I would have to go with
the poop is visible.
I smell it.
Oh, you smell it?
I smell it. Because I used to shovel out a pretty nasty goat pen, and I learned how to mouth breathe real good.
Yeah.
I think I could work my way around it. I'd smell it every once in a while, but I'd be like, oh.
Yeah, you train your brain to go, you know, numb to it or whatever, right? Yeah.
So it's easier to do with just a smell.
Or you get a stencil, right?
Okay.
And like a weird shaping stencil. Mm-hmm. And every day you just apply your little poopy on, no smell, no muss, no fuss. Mm-hmm. And you just say, it's a birthmark. It's just a real weird.
Oh, I see.
I just got a birthmark.
That's not bad. Oh, I have a birthmark.
Yeah.
That is poop. It's poop. They're going to know it's poop if they can see it.
No.
Like, you can't lie about mark. It.
Yeah, you can. Poop comes a lot of different ways.
Well, in this world, you lying about it is really just kind of an embarrassing thing where everyone feels sorry for you. And they go, oh, okay. Yeah. That is a birthmark. Yeah. And they just gag away.
But they can't smell it, so they don't know it's
poop. I think I'd go, I smell it. I just choke it down.
Take one.
That's a terrible world. Why did you build that world?
I wanted it to be. I tried to come up with a hard choice.
I don't want
to
live in that world.
Okay, here's something that's a bit more. It's a little bit softer, but maybe it's a more expansive thought exercise. Tomorrow, your programming in some ways is going to be reset, and specifically, it's going to be you're going to wake up tomorrow, and you are either going to be someone who believes deeply everything you are told by everybody. You believe everyone is being entirely truthful to you, or you believe that everyone is lying to you at all times. Which would you choose?
Okay, so the second one is already happening.
You live in a world in which you believe nothing.
Yeah.
True.
But would you choose that? I mean, you know how to deal with it, obviously, but would you switch to this world of infinite hope even if you were taken advantage of at some point?
It's not infinite hope, and I think you're conflating naivete with hope.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, you're right. Yes, it is you are a...
Gullible.
What is that word? Naive? Is that the word for someone who is naive?
Right.
Yeah. So you would be this innocent...
Based on the research from a number of, I think, 90s terrible movies were like...
Mm-hmm.
Like Broken Arrow.
Except Liar Liar was the standout hit of...
Oh, yeah.
But that was could only tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably better overall, at least by Hollywood standards, to believe everything everyone says.
Yes.
But I don't see... Only because for the stories, it would be hilarious.
Yeah. But, oh, man.
Not believing
anyone.
The way
it is right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, right now, I have a healthy skepticism, but there are certain things that I believe.
Yeah.
That when people tell me certain things.
Provided I could still do research and trust in, say, white papers. That was the standard.
Yes. But you essentially had to live your life by white papers.
Peer-reviewed research.
Yeah.
Published, journals. Then I can garner truth. Yeah, it would probably be closer to where I am if I believed no one.
All right.
But for the stories, hell yeah, I'm going to believe every stupid thing you fucking tell me.
I picture you being a beacon of hope and your optimism. And again, I know I'm conflating these two things. But I see I see you as a ray of sunshine who's so open and trustworthy. Yeah. And maybe, not now. Now you're.
Now. Jesus, no.
Like a regular Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right? See, these are things we know.
Mm-hmm.
Things go pretty well for them.
Yeah. Works out pretty good.
So far, you are a poop-smelling pessimist. I'm making a lot of leaps here. Obviously, I believe the truth is the best. Is awesome. Okay, last one. So this is also kind of a dark world that you found yourself in.
The dark world.
It's one in which...
Keep building these worlds.
People's relationship to animals is that they do fight them. It's not usually to the death. It's not a gruesome thing. Mm-hmm. But animals, you are responsible for raising one kind of animal, which will then fight only that other kind of animal.
Badger.
Of others' people. You'd pick a badger. You would be badger category. Yeah, I was going to ask which animals you would choose
badger.
To raise.
Badger fighting is pretty cool.
Badger fighting.
Badger!
That seems like pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw a really cool documentary on Wolverines the other day. holy shit. They're
fucking badass, aren't they?
Like, super cruel. I would never want it to happen, but two Wolverines fighting in the wild. Oh, whoa.
It's some shit.
Their teeth are like for like breaking bones.
Yeah.
They're not even for like piercing. They're just flat.
I would say that in this world, like mostly it's badger on badger, but there is like a category. So you may get a badger and a Wolverine fighting. I think that's fair.
Right.
Maybe like three raccoons fighting one badger or something like handicap matches or something. A
dozen ferrets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like six marmots.
Like the conversions are all over the place.
I went to the zoo the other day. Mongoose are pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I can't even imagine a mongoose fight. They wrap up on each other like a ferret. Yeah.
They fight like poisonous snakes, too. So yeah, they've got some moves.
That whole family of little critters. God, it's a good one. If not for whatever reason, if badgers, you know, went sideways.
Yeah.
Badger battling went sideways.
just wasn't paying the bills.
I don't know. I was raised with wolves. Like, we had wolves
growing
up. Yeah, I was
going to ask you about this
but
as well.
I don't know that I could stomach them fighting.
Right.
Because, yeah, I don't know that that
would have to be an animal you had some emotional distance from.
I think so.
It's grotesque.
Yeah. So would you recommend other people have wolf puppies?
Yeah,
this is something I've read about you, and it's usually just kind of like, oh, and she had wolves. But what was that actually like?
It's a long story. I would recommend if you were exactly in the scenario that I was in. Because otherwise, that's bananas.
Yeah.
Don't do that. My dad and uncle, his brother had bought like something close to, I don't know, 40 or 50 acres out, and they built houses. That's where he grew up. They split it. Like, the land was kind of split down the middle by a creek.
Mm-hmm.
So altogether, we had upwards of 50 acres accessible to the wolves because our property also butted up against old growth forest. So we had like a fence around the property for the most part, which they didn't give a shit about. It was mostly for the kids. Keep the kids in. Mm-hmm. Keep they're going to do whatever they're going to do.
Right.
So they could go hunt and they weren't dependent on us or enclosed in any way. And our neighbors had sheep, which was a problem. That could have been a better situation.
Some delicious sheep.
But so, yeah, we hand raised them, and when they got to be old enough to go hunting, and we had three from a litter, so they all went hunting out, you know, together.
Mm-hmm.
But up until that point, it was just very like, it wasn't structured like a way you would raise a puppy. They were outside dog, you know, to say the least. Like, they're not coming in and rolling around on the carpet.
Yeah.
There was like a high level of respect. But yeah, they're amazing. It was so much fun. We would go run full speed down these like deer trails through the woods, like down towards the creek. And just like the wolves would get in the front. And as long as you could keep a wolf in front of you, like you knew the path was at least passable, you know, if you ducked down hard enough. Mm-hmm. And just tear full speed down these trails and go play in the creek and like go explore the woods and go greet people who thought they could drive up our driveway, which was always a treat.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
To be surrounded
by wolves. It was
amazing.
Yeah, it was really fun. We had like long, hot summers, and I remember flopping back onto a wolf belly with a book and just like and sprinklers going and like just kicking it in the backyard, cuddled up.
That's
with
amazing.
The wolves.
That is amazing.
And
wow.
Playing with the sprinkler and getting the sprinkler taken away by the wolf, where it was like, you're fucking done with this. And they would just grab it and run it down to the other side of the yard, put it down, and be like, knock it off. Knock it off. Like, there's a lot of communication.
Did you train them in any way?
There's no training.
Yeah,
them.
That's what I'm going to ask. It just sounds like you're communing with these animals more than.
Yeah. We had smaller wolves that we'd gotten before that we didn't realize for a long time were actually a wolf breed. They're like red wolves. We thought they were coyotes, like coyotes. And so it was years later that we're like, oh, yeah, that was red wolves. But they were more like, I think one of the first dogs had, or first wolves, whatever, had actually had a collar on, but the rest of them didn't.
Mm-hmm.
The wolves we had a leash, which we never had reason to put a dog on a leash. So they just used it as a tug of war. You know what I mean? It was just their toy. Not real training. They just did kind of what they wanted to, but they knew that like they felt kind of responsible for us. Like, So like they would come and check in, and you know what I mean? Like they cared about us. They like they were would just protect
like,
us.
Like wild Pokemon. That had
They'd nip us and push us and, you know, pull.
They weren't
like,
going in that Pokeball. But they would hang out with you and like fight in a battle if they had to.
Exactly. But, they're not.
Yeah. They were your Pikachus.
They'll run around. Yeah. They'll do what they want. They're very sweet. Very mouthy. You know what I mean? Like vocally, but also you'll just get slobber. So much slobber. And that's how they would push and pull and corral you too.
We had a friend when we first moved to Portland we met here who had a dog that had, I think it was like 15% gray wolf or something. Mm-hmm. And this dog was very protective and very skittish around other people. But once it got to know you, it would sneak up on you and just bash you with its snout. And like the crotch or the stomach.
Getting hit
like,
in the back of the knee and just going down. Yeah. They
love that game.
They think they're hilarious is what it is.
When your friend's like, oh, I have a wolf. Like, whoa, in your two-bedroom apartment? What?
That's and that's hard. And that's usually where you see like wolves and they're so deeply unhappy. That's not where they're supposed to be.
No. This dog was well-loved, though, and he did really well.
Yeah.
But, yeah. It was interesting when I tried to take my, shelter dog. I had this shelter dog named Tully.
Yeah.
That was insane. Totally separation anxiety. And
he liked to ram a snout into a groin.
He was a sweet dog. He's a sweet dog. But we put him and that dog in a Subaru Impreza together. And my friend was like, it's fine. And
he
sat between them while they fought for like a mile. I was like, why are you doing this to yourself? He's like, it's cool. They'll be fine. I'll make them lay down. He didn't.
No.
He almost did. Good job. Close, Tim. He almost got it, Tim.
Jesus.
He got bit in the face, though.
Yeah. I saw that coming. That's funny. Yeah, I think the key to wolves is if you don't try to make them do stuff that they're not,
no,
then you're great and they're wonderful to be around. Like, they're very sweet, affectionate, and, like, they communicate a lot to you.
I like it. I recommend
great
it.
To be around. Yeah.
Unfortunately, we only have time for one more song, Keelan, but I know you have at least one more to play. What's number three on your playlist?
I wanted to play a song from Nico Vega because Asia Volkman, the lead, is from Eugene, which is a hometown, close enough, whatever. And I really, really love that band. I've watched them. I've gone to a ton of shows. In San Francisco, I did that thing when Asia was pregnant, actually, with her daughter and ran up to the front finally for like one of my favorite songs and was singing the lyrics with her. And I don't know if you've ever followed a band outside of kind of where they are big, but I've learned that sometimes it's unsettling to suddenly see a fan and a sea of fans that's not singing,
right,
singing very enthusiastically at you.
Yes.
Because her reaction for 1 second was like, Jesus, like, wow, okay.
Well, we've already heard about you.
But I don't.
Artists are put on warning when you're attending.
I'm a super fan. But that's the thing. The album doesn't speak to me as much as it did. So what I want to play instead is a band that I was into at the same time that I also followed around that's not from Portland, but is one of my favorites. It's called Girl in a Coma. One of those same core good principles of a lot of the songs have distortion enough that when you crank it, the better it sounds. Like Sheer Mag. Yeah. Which also, should we just play a Sheer Mag song? Because it's amazing. But I want to introduce you to Girl in a Coma. My phone's off. So I will have you play. What's one that cranks? Oh, it's on this. Hang on. It's on the second album. It's like the second song, and it was featured in a, not Guillermo del Toro, Robert Rodriguez.
Oh, sure, sure.
He picked the song up from them playing it. Si Una Vez is the song.
Si Una Vez.
Yeah.
Me puse tus fuerzas a tus pies
Well, Caitlin, thank you so much for hanging out tonight.
Thank you so
I wish
much
we could hang
me.
Out for like 3 or more hours, but I think
it's moist in here.
Yeah, it's starting to.
We're all starting to
choke to death on our own carbon dioxide. But thank you so much for coming on the show.
You are
so busy and do a lot of great creative things in the greater Northwest. What's the best way for people to keep track of you and all your shows and releases?
And what are your favorite open mics so we can come see you?
Come to my show. I mean, oh my God, definitely support the open mics. Without them, they wouldn't. Without you, they wouldn't exist. However that goes.
So all you weirdos who want to come out and see some open mics.
Yeah, definitely go to some. I don't know. Pick one. Find it. choose your own adventure. Midnight Mic on Friday at Fun House is actually really, really, really fun. It's outside.
That's a cool place.
It's wild.
Just in general. So.
But I am having a website built, so I will be at UncleKate.com. Also at Caitlin Weyerhaeuser for professional reasons. But Uncle Kate is a lot easier to spell.
Yes.
So you can follow me at Uncle Kate on Twitter as well, and I post about a lot of my shows on there. I have a big one to plug October 4th. Les Stand Up will be at Helium again, which has been really, really fun to be able to work these kind of different clubs and spaces. So taking, we're usually at Siren Theater. But October 4th is Wednesday. We'll be at Helium, 8 p.m. show. It'll be a ton of fun.
Great show. And a great place to see good comedy. So
yeah,
it's a great show. Great.
Oh, and come to I Anonymous every first Wednesday. Same. at Curious Comedy Theater. Follow me from one to the other. But that's my monthly, and that's the most fun thing that I've been, I think, able to do in a long time, which is just riff on and judge the iAnonymous submissions from the Mercury.
So fun.
It is so fun.
Yeah.
People are bananas here. Knock it off, Portland. So that's a fun show. And
awesome. Well, everyone should definitely make the time to check you out. Plenty of opportunities to do so, but especially on October 4th at Helium for that
thank
show.
You.
So thanks again for being here.
Yeah.
And thank all of you for listening to this episode of Hot Garbage. Though I'm certain we would do it without you, it would not be nearly as fun.
No.
So thanks for tuning in. If you like this episode, we do one of these every single week. The easiest way to get that is to subscribe through iTunes, and it'll just come right to you every Thursday or Friday. We're not going to turn the screws on ourselves too hard, but it's going to be before your weekend. So
you'd be surprised when it comes out.
Mostly Thursdays. Primarily Thursdays, like 90% Thursdays.
Yeah.
While you're there subscribing, go ahead and leave us a few stars, leave us a ranking, let other people know what you thought of the show. It does help them find us and judge for themselves. If you want to speak to...
We say thank you to Tokyo a lot for listening, but thank you to Portland for listening, too.
Portland first and foremost.
Yeah.
And
Tokyo.
You're the Tokyo of the Northwest. Portland, we love you. If you want to talk to Nate, Andy, and I via email, you can do so at hotgarbagepodcast@gmail.com. That's HAUTE, Garbage Podcast.
Yeah, Andy, or you can hit me on my DMs and I'll give you Drew's phone number.
Yeah. I am slow to respond, but I will get back to each and every one of you.
Yeah.
Andy, why don't you take us out in something hot, hot, hot hot night?
I'm going to play this guy's kind of a comedian. He's a musician, but he's a comedy musician.
Oh, boy.
His name is Andy Warpigs, kind of a tribute to Andy Warhol and Black Sabbath.
Sure.
Also a theater major who played Dr. Frankenfurter in Rocky Horror Picture Show.
You are speaking my language right now.
Yes.
Way to put a bow on this.
Yeah. Was this a gift just for me?
It is. This is a guy from West Phoenix. His name's Andy Warpigs, and this is a song called Drowning Babies.
Thank God for you.
For Caitlin Weyerhaeuser, for Nate, for Andy. This is Drew. We'll see you next week on Hot Garbage.